2 Samuel 16 is where we're at this morning. I'll try to talk a little bit louder. I know the rain's happening, and that's good. It makes me think, and this isn't the sermon, but just it makes me think when the rain, the way the Lord sometimes talks about His words, and particularly in the Old Testament, sort of being like showers and refreshing. And, you know, for the longest time, y'all know this summer, man, things have been dead. They're just dead. And there was just brown and dust. And, I mean, it looked like there's no life. And then all of a sudden you get a couple showers and then you can't even keep up with the life. And I think our lives are like that. You know, and if you find that there's a deadness inside, you're just thirsting. I mean, you're just desperate for something to quench the thirst, something to help. It's a sign that there's no life, there's no words of God, there's no water there, and it's displayed in nature. This is what the process looks like. And somebody said, and then Jeff reiterated it this morning about cutting the grass, and somebody said, you cut it too low and it kills everything. You can't kill everything forever when there's water. You just put a little water on it and it grows. There's life. There's something there. It just needs water is all it needs. And that's pretty evident in nature. So anyhow, it's what the Word of God's supposed to be. It's what the Lord said, the Holy Spirit, the rivers of living water, all that. 2 Samuel 16. I'm going to direct you to just two verses, verses 11 and 12. And I'm going to tell you the history and what's happening. And this morning we are going to deal with the subject of guilt. Guilt. Maybe not necessarily productive guilt. But then there is productive guilt. There's necessary guilt. Such thing as doing bad things and you feel guilty, and that's part of the process, part of the thing there. But I'm reading through 2 Samuel, and I go through and I see the end of David's life, and some of the decisions he makes in this chapter eventually have to be undone. And David generally makes good decisions. But in this chapter, not to mention the Bathsheba thing, but in this chapter, he makes a couple of decisions that eventually have to be overturned. And eventually, Solomon, his son, when he becomes king, he has to deal with some of the things that David didn't deal with. And so I'll just tell you that. I'll tell you that some of the companion passages of what's going on here, they're resolved eventually in 1 Kings chapter 2 when Solomon takes the throne. But these two verses I've asked you to look at, 2 Samuel 16, 11 and 12, really sum up David's perspective on why he's in the position he's in. And it's something I thought about specifying parental guilt. There's that. There's parental guilt. There's mom guilt. There's those things where you look back and you regret. I'll tell you a Several years ago, this came up, and I don't, you know, I'll just tell the story just to introduce all this stuff. But I remember my dad was going to the doctor and getting some medicine, and I mean, he had some heart problems and things like that. And one of the things that I remember, he asked my brother and I this question. And he said, how do you think I was as a parent? And I don't have anything negative to say. It's just, I said, I think all my problems were self-inflicted. I don't have any negative thing to say. And he said, well, your brother said the same thing. So that was good. But when you're a parent, you reflect on things. And you think about what you could have done and what you maybe should have done and all that. But not everybody in here is a parent. So to deal with it specifically is going to exclude some of y'all. So I want to generally deal with this subject of guilt. And 2 Samuel 16:11, David's case, he makes this statement. He says, verse 11, David said to Abishai and to all his servants, "Behold, my son which came forth of my bowels seeketh my life. How much more now may this Benjaminite do it? Let him alone, let him curse, for the Lord hath bidden him. It may be that the Lord will look on mine affliction and that the Lord will requite me good for his cursing this day." Those two verses really tell you what David's thinking about this. As he's being exiled from Jerusalem by his own son, by Absalom, and being essentially Absalom is taking over the kingdom forcefully. And David's been run out with a few of his people. On the way out, as he's essentially running for his life, he runs into a couple people. We looked at Ziba a couple weeks ago, or last week, whenever that was. And then he runs into this guy named Shimeah. And Shimeah, he sees David. Shimeah is from Saul's family. Remember, Saul is the king that was basically God. He got him off the throne, and Saul was not God's pick, and so nobody in Saul's house was going to be on the throne after Saul. And Shimeah is from that tribe of Benjamin. And so he comes out, he sees David running for his life, essentially with a group of people. And Shimeah starts throwing rocks at David. He's cussing at David and basically telling David, this is what you get. This is what you get for your bloodshed against my family. And really, David hadn't shed any blood. He didn't hurt Saul. He didn't hurt anybody in Saul's family. He was a good servant while he was a servant. And so this man, he's got a warped perspective on what has actually happened. But he goes out and he's very vocal about it. He can't stand David, so he's cursing, he's throwing rocks at David and assaulting David, and I mean trying to anyway. And he's getting to the heart of David by saying, "This is what you get. This is what you get for doing what you did to my family." And again, David didn't do anything to his family, but this is his perspective on things. And so he accuses David and tries to hurt David. And then when David's men see this, one of David's men says, just let me go take his head off. I'll go take this guy's head off. And he probably would. And so David says, no, don't do that. And he essentially says, I'm getting what I deserve. That's David's thought. I'm just getting what I deserve. Let Shimei throw rocks, let him cuss me. This is how the Lord's directed him, and just I'm just getting what I deserve. The problem is, as you go forward in this story, as I said it earlier, Solomon will end up having to deal with Shimei. And when Solomon gets the throne, David says, and he looks back on this episode in his life, and he says, you know the wickedness in this man's heart, and you know what to do with him. And so Solomon tells Shimei, you can set up a house in Jerusalem, and he gives him parameters and says, all right, but I don't really trust you outside the boundaries of Jerusalem. So if I find you leaving, I'm going to kill you. That's what Solomon says to this man. And Shimei ends up leaving, and Solomon has him killed. And the very last verse of that chapter says, and Solomon established the kingdom. And it's almost this list of things that David should have done, but he didn't do. And he tells Solomon, hey, you're going to have to deal with this. You're going to have to deal with this. You're going to have to deal with this. And Shimei's on that list. I didn't deal with this guy. I should have probably dealt with him, but I didn't. And so now you'll have to deal with him. So all of that said, to bring you to this idea and understanding that David makes these decisions, some of these decisions in this chapter, on the basis of the guilt he has. And some of these decisions are not good decisions. He is, but in a general sense, let's just deal with it generally before we get to some specific things. Guilt is a very compelling thing, and you know this. It's universal. It is in some cultures and religions. There's so many types of guilt, and who and what makes a person guilty. And it's almost in our culture, in American religion, just dealing with American religion, it seems like almost every decision is supposed to be some religious decision. I mean, even in basic commerce, you know, I'm going to buy this milk because it came from this source. And so not only am I getting something I need for my family, but I'm doing righteousness while I'm doing it. So there's this element of religion that's tied to commerce, and what you believe about, whether people say they're religious or not. There are criteria for wickedness and righteousness, whether someone says they're religious or not. They have a basis, they have a criteria, they have a metric they use. The point is guilt is a compelling thing, and making people feel guilty is sometimes there's real guilt, but sometimes it's not real guilt. And as David flees, he reflects on his what he's done with Absalom, and he says this. He made that statement. He says, "My own son, who was born to me, seeks to kill me. Why should I hold that against somebody else who's not my son then, if they seek to kill me?" You know what that is? That is guilt speaking. That is, I'm making this comparison. It's not a real comparison. It's just, why should I have the high ground? Why should I have the ability to criticize when I myself am in this position? And so his guilt is speaking. And it's not good guilt. It's not good guilt it's not directing his life in a good way. It's some sources of guilt, just generally. There's religious guilt. There's victim guilt. Ever heard of that? Victim guilt? Where somebody who's passed away, and somebody's still alive, and they reflect back and they think, why am I still alive? Why did the Lord take this person and leave me? Why am I still alive? That's survivor guilt. Victim guilt is this. I crossed them up. That's survivor guilt. Victim guilt is this is my fault. Everything's my fault, and I'm the cause of all of this. Survivor guilt. Why am I still alive? Why did this person gone? Talked about parent guilt. There's caretaker guilt, caregiver guilt. There's state guilt, legal guilt. The point is, guilt is this concept. It's this real thing. It's a very powerful thing. There's many sources of it. And then as we get into this, give you a few results of it. A few results of it, because I want to get to the point of solving it. How do you address it? How do you address it? There's some results of guilt. And when I say guilt, again, I want to be very specific. This is the type of guilt that is not healthy. There is healthy guilt. This is the type of guilt that's not healthy. We're not talking about good guilt here. We're talking about weaponized guilt. Guilt that's used to immobilize, suppress righteousness. We're talking about it in Sunday school with the Corinthians, where the church, or some people in the church, would hang sin over somebody's head so that they could control the person. That's how you use guilt to manipulate and to immobilize people. You hang this over their head, and you'll never get to this point. You'll never achieve this. You'll never get to this thing. And so what it does is it immobilizes somebody. There's parental guilt what does it do? It forces you sometimes to accept things you shouldn't accept. That's what David is accepting, things he shouldn't accept. And what he's doing is he's likening, okay, well, my son does this to me, therefore I should just lay down and just roll over and die, essentially. Because if this is the way he is going to be to me, who am I to say? Who am I to deal with this? Who am I to have the high ground on this? So what does this parental guilt do with David? It forces him to accept things he shouldn't accept, and it forces you to accept things you shouldn't accept. You accept sin. And why would you accept sin? Well, you keep telling yourself, well, you know, I did that, and I've done this, and I've done this. Therefore, I'm going to allow all of this to go on. Well, who am I to say, and who am I to criticize, and who am I to judge, and who am I to instruct? I got this in my life, and I got that in my life. And we'll get to, because sin's a real thing and all that, and we'll get to that in a second. But some of the results forces you to accept things you shouldn't accept. David says, let him alone, let him curse. It causes you to abandon truths that you shouldn't abandon. Causes you to put aside things you know are right. You know this is right. And you know you shouldn't allow this. But you keep resting on the fact that, well, I did some bad things and I've made some mistakes. So what does it make you do? It makes you say, well, I shouldn't be critical now. Well, that type of guilt and immobilization and manipulation and that type of guilt that really suppresses righteousness. I tell you what, predators use guilt this way. That's how predators use guilt. They use it to make people accept things they shouldn't accept. It's a weapon. It's something that I am going to make you accept this. Predators use guilt that way. Predator may say, what I am doing is your fault. This is your fault. That's a way to use guilt. It forces people to accept things that they shouldn't accept. Another result of this guilt, it burdens you with unreasonable standards. I've had to think about, I mean, as a parent, you think about instructions you give. I mean, I think you do. You think about instructions you give, what the expectations are and should be. And then how do you administrate those expectations? And how do you carry those things out? And some of that administration, some of that, I don't know, the duties of just carrying out the expectations. I personally had to reflect, and I know every parent does. You reflect on, am I being too hard? I mean, you can set up a system as a parent that your kid can't achieve. And with every good advancement, there's always some problem in it. Well, you did good, son, but hey, quit the but. Just you did good. You did good. You've done good. And so just don't make a system where people can't achieve and they can't be encouraged. You know what that is? That is holding guilt over somebody, and they can never get to the point where they have satisfied or made happy mom or dad. That's manipulation. You just have to be careful with it. I think about, I'll say this, Ben's not here. I know, Ben was our first child. I know I was harder on him than anybody else. You're trying to figure it out. And I look back and I think, you know, that expectation isn't reasonable. That right there, I couldn't live up to that. I couldn't do that. There's nobody on the earth that could live up to that. And so I think about that and reflect, and you know, it's a form of, I mean, it is, you feel guilty, but we'll get to resolving some of this in a second. What does it do? What does guilt do? It burdens you with unreasonable standards, or if you're the person inflicting the guilt, you make unreasonable standards. You set up a system that nobody could achieve the system. And with every achievement, there's always some negative thing. You've done great, but I wish you would just do it like this. You did really good, but I wish you would just. So what are we supposed to think? I'm never going to get where Mom and Dad want me to get. Just some open thoughts here. Guilt burdens you with unreasonable standards sometimes. If you're the one inflicting the guilt, you're putting these standards on things and people. You can never accomplish. You can never do enough. You're just never doing enough. It's results in prison and bondage. It results in unnecessary sorrow. You know what Jesus Christ told the Pharisees one time? He says, you bind heavy burdens on people. And they can't lift these burdens. And you can't lift these burdens. And yet you saddle people with guilt that you can't do anything about and they can't do anything about. You just weaponize it. You make it into something where guilt is a useful thing, and you take it out of its context and you make it a weapon against people and you hurt people with it. He says you just lay these burdens on people. And Paul talks about, he says, be careful. In latter days, these seducing spirits show up. What do? They forbid marriage and they forbid eating meats. What is that? That's just unnecessary guilt. You can eat meat, you can eat bacon, you can eat pork chops, whatever. Just be thankful for it. What is it? It's just unnecessary guilt. It's a way to manipulate people. And so these spirits, they come in and they sound real neat. And, oh, I found this new truth. And it told me what I'm not supposed to be doing. And we're not supposed to be eating meat on Friday. What? What are you talking about? What spiritual value is that? There's no spiritual value to that. It is just a burden that has no value other than manipulating people. That's it. It does not make people spiritual if they don't do this. It does not make people spiritual if they do this. And so it's just a tool of manipulation. And Jesus Christ says to those Pharisees, look, you guys, you have this system, and you throw these burdens on people, and then you can't lift the burdens. They can't lift the burdens. Your whole system is junk. It's just a manipulation for their money. That's it. Hey, you're guilty. Now pay me some money. That's the system. In a little sophisticated way. I mean, just not the way they'd say. What's the results of guilt? Unreasonable standards. You deal with some religious things and spirits. He says these are seducing spirits, man. They present themselves as just, I mean, they're appealing, they're attractive. They're on YouTube and they're really neat. And this thing this guy says is really interesting. And it's seducing. And it's not seducing in a physical way. It's seducing in a spiritual way. And it's like, man, I'm learning something. I've never seen this before. It's opening my eyes. What does it say? It says, don't eat meat. You shouldn't be marrying. You know, God didn't say that. You understand He did not say those things. Those are rules, and this is what Paul talks about with Timothy. He says people have their consciences sealed or seared conscience, and their conscience is tied to this idol. And so they think about what the idol says or what they think the idol says or what they've ascribed the idol to say. And they think about it. And so they live their lives according to the idol. And the idol is in their conscience. And you know, if I want to sell my house, I need a St. Christopher or something or whatever the deal is. And so my conscience is tied to this idol. And so I feel guilty based on this idol. And I feel relief based on this idol. He says, this is the way people live in darkness. Their consciences are bound to these idols. And the idols are nothing. They're just plastic and wood and rock. They're nothing. And then people, their consciences are bound to these things. What is it? This is unreasonable guilt. Unreasonable standards. They're not truth. And then think about this. Think about this with guilt. I feel bad. I'm sorry. I'm preaching on guilt, but just like this is, I feel like this is what's happening in this chapter. Guilt makes life hard. False guilt. Guilt that is unnecessary, unresolved, can't be resolved. That kind of guilt makes life hard for people around you. Consider what it does to people around you. Think about what David. So, David and the people with David are forced to endure this man throwing rocks at their heads, cursing at them. I don't know how many men are with Shimei, but they're forced to endure this because David's mind is, who am I to judge? Who am I to judge this guy? And so that doesn't just affect David. That affects everybody around David. So now everybody has to participate in this onslaught of stone throwing and cursing and bitterness and anger. It's something that makes life hard for people around you. results of guilt. And this is, again, we're talking about bad guilt. We're talking about guilt that should be dealt with. It should just be, you don't need to carry this level of guilt. So you got some sources, some results. What has it done to people? What does it do to people? How does it interact with people? That's what it does. So to be specific, going back to this, to be specific, how do you deal with that kind of guilt? I think about Lot's wife. Remember the Bible says, remember Lot's wife. And so while Sodom and Gomorrah is burning to the ground, Lot's wife is desperate to save her family. Undoubtedly thinking, where did I go wrong with this? Where did I go wrong with this? And she runs back in, tries to get back into Sodom and Gomorrah. She is immediately just turned into this pillar of salt. I don't know if she's buried in salt, if she's buried in a brimstone. She turns into this pillar of salt. She's destroyed. Her life is destroyed. The Bible says, remember Lot's wife. Regrets. Lots of regrets. So let's deal with guilt. How do you deal with it? In a general sense, in a specific sense, how do you deal with it? Well, first off, let me deal with reasonable guilt. Because there is reasonable guilt. There is a such thing, like I said earlier, of doing wrong, sinning, and having to deal with the consequences of your own sin. And so that type of guilt has to be dealt with. And this is what Jesus Christ came to do. He came to take away the sin of the world. What is that? To take away the burden, to take away the thing that had mankind all in bondage. So Jesus Christ came to take away the sin and the guilt away. I want to say that first. And if you've never trusted Jesus Christ, that's the first thing. That's the first thing. I think about probably people make so many decisions in their life based on guilt and, put it this way, unresolved guilt. It's just unresolved. And they end up making stupid decisions and dumb decisions because this thing's never been resolved. It's just not resolved. And sometimes you and I make it so that it can't be resolved. We're like the Pharisees and you make this system. Going back to Jesus Christ, though, Jesus Christ came to take away the sin of the world. But practically speaking, let's deal with some of this stuff. You reflect back, you think like David, and you say, you know what? I'm not worthy to instruct because of this thing in my past. If it's in your past, okay. But if it's in your present, number one, quit the sin. Because you're going to feel guilty as long as the sin's hanging around. Especially when it comes to trying to instruct other people. And this is where you got to be, I think, careful with some of this stuff. As long as you're holding on to sin, there will be an unwillingness to be critical of certain things that you need to be critical of. Some things need to be judged. I mean, do you agree that some things probably need to be judged? You need to make a decision about this, and you need to excise this out of life. This needs to be done away with. So if there's sin, current sin, this is the first, it's easier said than done. But understand how it's affecting things. Dealing with this kind of guilt is directly related to the sin that's going on in your life. So what do? Well, you need to stop the sin. Get rid of the sin. I know it's easier said than done. But understand what it's doing and why you're not able to deal with things the way you need to deal with them, it's because you're letting things into your life that shouldn't be in there. And you're participating in things you shouldn't participate in. Therefore, you're unwilling to build the walls that need to be built. Why? Because if you're letting the enemy in, well, then you don't want the enemy out. You want the enemy in. Now, you may not like what it does to your kids, but if you don't want to build the wall, you don't want to build the wall. Stop the sin. Number two, you come to the place like David's come to, and maybe the sin is past. It's just like you're just reflecting, and you're just saying, who am I to judge this? Who am I to make this critical thought? Well, think about it this way. You have to stop piling bad decisions upon bad decisions. Some of these decisions David makes in this chapter have to be undone. And someone else is going to have to undo them. David will leave it to Solomon to undo some of these things. He'll have to deal with the thing with Ziba in a couple chapters. But quit piling bad decisions on top of bad decisions. It doesn't make things better when you know what's right to do and you don't do it. It doesn't make it better. It prolongs the disaster. It prolongs the discomfort. It prolongs the grief. And then you'll ask in a week, in a month, why is all of this stuff? Why can't I get peace about it? Why can't I get that? Well, you can't because you keep piling bad decisions on bad decisions. Quit letting the guilt dictate what decisions and make the right decision. If this thing needs to be dealt with, it needs to be dealt with. Here's another thought. Number three, just without letting guilt be the guide or bad guilt be the guide necessarily, I think it's good to acknowledge the past sin, but stand firm. You know, and not to just like spill your guts or anything. I've learned, and I think it's helpful. You know, with kids, with family, it's important as parents that we are, I hate to use the word transparent, but not to pretend like you're something that you're not, but also not to excuse bad behavior because of your past. And so it's important to be, I think, open, have some open conversation. I've observed, maybe you do too, seems like the kids and people, when they grow up really well, they have a real good, open conversation and relationship with mom and dad. And that's just an openness. And maybe you don't have that, but you can have that. I mean, when you have kids, you can learn, you can do that. But having some openness, but also be firm about it. I mean, you let your kids know, you know what? Yeah, I own the guilt that I have. But it's also my responsibility to do the right thing. Yes, this happened. Yes, that's past. And yes, it's my responsibility to do right and to train you right. You know, when the Lord put children in parents' lives, He knew He was putting sinners in charge of sinners. He knew that. And so how do you manage that system? You get some light from the words of God. Let sin be sin. Do the right thing. If there's some things to acknowledge, there's things to acknowledge. Ultimately, get to the truth of the matter. When you're dealing with guilt, you're dealing with a lot of emotion sometimes. And you need to get to the truth. What is the truth of the matter and what needs to happen here? And let's quit playing like the past is going to dictate that we're not going to deal with this. We need to deal with it. Dealing with this guilt. You think about it this way. Here's another thought. You consider how your inaction, you know, you keep telling, well, I'm in no position to do this. I'm in no position to judge this. I'm in no position. That, you know, a lot of times that just sounds like the devil. Don't you criticize that. And I've heard people say stuff like that. It's like this. I listened to a preacher, good preaching, all that stuff. And somebody said to me one time, well, I knew him back when he was that. So you're not going to be able to get anything from God because of that. So you're going to bring that up. And has nothing to do with, in fact, he's saved. But you're going to bring that up and put that in front of the Holy Spirit of God and say, I'm not going to listen because it came from that. You know what they said of Jesus Christ? And Jesus Christ said this. He said, a prophet is not without honor save in his own country. You know what the people said that lived around Jesus Christ when he was growing up? I saw him when he was a kid. How is he a Messiah? I saw Mary change his diaper. How is he anything? I mean, he went to school with the guy. Probably pretty good kid, but it's just when you bring it down to that level and it becomes human, and then you discredit God's work in a human being. Because they're human. And undoubtedly people did it with Jesus Christ. I think of another thing they said about Jesus Christ. They said, we know the wording is it's we know where they're from, but we don't know where you came from. Something like that. And he's telling them he came from the Father. The idea of God working through human vessels, that is, you can use it as an excuse, but I'll just say, God didn't use it as an excuse. You say, I don't like the preacher, I don't like the mouthpiece or whatever. Every mouthpiece for God that you're going to run into is a sinner. Every single one. And if you're going to use people's humanity against God, what you're left with is no God. That's something you've got to come to terms with. Now consider this. Consider how your inaction is affecting your family and the people around you. So here's me and all my guilt. And I need to deal with this situation. And I got family and I got kids around me. And they're living through this. And I need to deal with this, but I keep telling myself, well, again, who am I to criticize that? Who am I to take a stand there? Who am I to do this? Well, what I need to do is consider these decisions are not just affecting me. Everyone around me has to live with these decisions. And when I let this stuff into my house, when I let this stuff around my family, and I keep putting it off because, well, you know, hey, I did bad stuff too, so, you know, shouldn't have to deal with that. I shouldn't deal with that. Maybe if you're not going to get a grip on it that way, maybe you need to step back and consider how it affects everybody else. Because the enemy that broke through the wall isn't just dealing with you. It's dealing with all the families that live in the city, dealing with all the people around there. And so that enemy that needs to be dealt with, quit. Maybe if your own personal issues with dealing with the sin that needs to be dealt with, if that's not enough, consider what it does to other people. Consider what it does to family. And maybe that's reason enough that, you know what, maybe I don't feel like X, Y, Z, or I don't feel like I should do this, but I see how it's destroying family. It's destroying people I love. Consider how your inaction is affecting your family. Because, like we said earlier, one of the ways guilt is weaponized is it moves people to inaction. Just, I can't do anything. I can't put a stake in the ground here because, hey, you know what? I messed up too. Dealing with guilt. Stop the sin. Quit piling bad decisions on bad decisions. Acknowledge the past, but stand firm. Consider how this inaction is affecting your family. And I want to show you one verse. Look in 1 John chapter 2. Great verse. I'll wrap it up with this one. 1 John chapter 2. Verse 1. You know, it's interesting where this shows up right after chapter 1, verse 10. And all that. 1 John chapter 2, verse 1. This is what Jesus Christ came to bear, to deal with guilt. And to deal with sin the way it needs to be dealt with. So you get strength from the advocate. He says, my little children, these things write I unto you that you sin not. Okay, so don't sin. But, and if any man sin, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. So you have two statements. Side by side. Number one, quit sinning. Number two, when you sin, there's an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. He is the only man that ever lived a holy life. And I cannot stress this enough. I guarantee there are people in this room who are making bad decisions in life because they feel guilty about something. And maybe it's legitimate and maybe it's not legitimate. You're making bad decisions about life because of some guilt. And if it's illegitimate guilt, we talked about how to deal with that. If it's real guilt, get it under the blood of Jesus Christ. Get it taken care of by Jesus Christ. If we sin, we have an advocate with the Father. That's what Jesus Christ came to do, to eliminate the guilt that was on humanity through sin. So these things, this, I don't know, there's so many aspects to it, but it just, when I read through 2 Samuel, I read about David, I read the statements David makes, it sounds so similar to statements people make. And their lives are just in bondage to either an imaginary principle that's not really true, or their lives are in bondage to actual sin. But the point is that guilt is gripping, and it takes you places you don't need to go, and it makes you accept things you don't need to accept, and then it makes other people around you have to accept these things, the results of guilt. Then dealing with guilt, how do you deal with it? Ultimately, you deal with it in Jesus Christ. His blood pays for. I mean, this is what God accepts. But there's just thinking about David. There's just things that he makes decisions about in life that have to be undone. Why does he make those decisions? That was my thought. Why is he making these decisions? Well, he says why he's making these decisions. If my son who seeks my life is after me, why should I be critical of this guy? Well, consider the people around you, David. Well, consider what this is going to do for the next generation. Well, consider how this affects other people. Consider how this affects your decision making now in this time. Well, who am I to judge? Who am I to judge? You know what? That's guilt speaking. Sometimes it doesn't need to speak. It needs to be dealt with. It just needs to be dealt with. So I know there was a kind of a shotgun approach with this, but maybe one of these things hit home. I hope it did. I hope it did. But let's do this. I'll tell you what. It's already 12:10. Sam, you want to play something on the piano? Maybe there's something you need to get dealt with the Lord, between you and the Lord. Maybe there's something you need to deal with between people, somebody else. If y'all want to bow your heads, close your eyes, we'll have a little time of just reflecting on these things.